Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 18, Lord Vamana, the Dwarf Incarnation, Text Number 6. And there's no purport to these verses, so we'll just read the translations. O King, when the Lord appeared on Dwadasi, the 12th day of the moon, the sun was at the meridian. As every learned scholar knows, this Dwadasi is called Vijaya. So, everyone knew that? What's that? Vijaya, yes. I forgot to look it up. I think Shravana is in... Does anyone have an internet connection here? They can look up Shravana. What sign it's in? I think it's in Capricorn. Shravana. Do we have any astrologers here? So if it is Capricorn, the moon's in Capricorn, and the sun's at the midheaven, he appeared at midday. See, can we actually figure it out? Sun was at the meridian. It doesn't say what house the moon was in. It just says it was in Shravana. Shravana Dwadasi. So Dwadasi means the 11th day of the moon. And the sun, so this 4 days after that, Dwadasi, Triodasi, Chaturdasi, and then there is the new moon. So the sun must be three. If it's Capricorn, then the sun must be in probably Pisces, which would put the ascendant at Gemini. So the sun would be in the 10th house, the moon would be in the 9th house, or in the 8th house. Does it say what? Capricorn. And it's which nakshatra is it? How long does it take? Anyhow, it's probably so. So, what's that? 22nd. 27. So, yeah, 22nd. So every day the moon moves one nakshatra. Not quite. Actually, it takes 2 days to go through a nakshatra. They have to figure it out, but it's probably Gemini rising with sun in Pisces and the moon in the 8th house in Shravana, in Capricorn. So we can find out by astrology. One can learn astrology by reading Srimad Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita. For instance, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his horoscope was, he was Leo rising, and the moon was in the first house, and the sun was in the 7th, Mercury was debilitated in the 8th, which made him seem a little eccentric to people. Jupiter was in the 5th house, in his own sign, in Sagittarius. Saturn was exalted in Libra. Rahu, I believe, was in, I can't remember where. Oh, Rahu, of course, it was an eclipse. So Rahu was in the first house with the sun, and Ketu was in the 7th house. Gave him more than one marriage. So, if you see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's horoscope, for instance, you can see what is astrology. You can see his periods. There's in Vedic astrology, you have periods, that is, dasas, they're called, where different periods of time, one has different activities. So being born with the moon in the 7th house in Aquarius. Aquarius, you've heard of Aquarius before? The New Age. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ushered in the New Age of Aquarius. He was actually the age of Aquarius, with the moon in the 12th house, in the 7th house. And I forget what nakshatra that is. Anyhow, I have to look it up. But then you can see when he was born, what his situation was, what his parents were like. You can see what his education was like, what his varna was. You can see when he was going to take sannyas, when he was going to disappear. All those are in his horoscope. So if you look at that, then you have a perfect way of learning astrology. And Krishna, does anyone know what sign Krishna was born in? Where was the moon when Krishna was born? Krishna is born as a Taurus ascendant. Why was he born as a Taurus ascendant? What is the qualification of Taurus? They like cows. They're farmers. They like farming and cows. So does Krishna like cows? He's definitely not a vegan. He's a farmer. He likes farming. And the moon, where was the moon? It says the moon appeared in its fullness when Krishna was born, although it wasn't the proper time. Somehow or another, the moon appeared in full, so that means it was in the seventh house. And the seventh house, the nakshatras there, they're Anuradha and Vishakha. So what is Anuradha and Vishakha? Who's Vishakha? Ever hear of Vishakha? Dum dum dum. Who's Vishakha? Yes, and Radha, Anuradha, Lalita. So Krishna's moon was in, I think it was Anuradha, probably was Vishakha. And his son was where Radha, Abhijit, it was where Radha. Radha is Rohini. Rohini. Anyhow, it all works out. Generally, like Lord Ramachandra, just as astrologically, what sign was he born in? Does anyone know? He was a Cancer rising. In case you happen to be a Cancer. Hey, and his moon was in the first house. Cancer, and his sun, his Jupiter was in the first house, exalted with the moon, and the sun was exalted in the 10th house. So what dynasty did Lord Ramachandra appear in? Does anyone know? Yes, he was a Surya dynasty. So he had an exalted sun. And second house represents your family. Your family, your food, your wealth, your dynasty. So his dynasty was, second house appeared in the 10th exalted. Sun was exalted. His dynasty was a sun god, and he appeared as the exalted son of the sun god, member of the dynasty. Just like Krishna, he appeared with anyhow, I'll have to look that up. Anyhow, but then Lord Ramachandra, he had, I believe, Venus exalted in the 9th house. So he had a exalted wife, the goddess of fortune is pretty exalted. And his Mercury was, I think it was in this 11th house, which gave him some troubles. He got banished in the forest for 18 years or something. So there's always good and bad in every horoscope. But it was good that he got banished in the horoscope for 18 years, because then he could kill all those Rakshasas. So it was bad for the Rakshasas. So everything fits together. So one who's actually Krishna conscious and knows the Bhagavatam, for instance, one will know all these different sciences, the Vedic sciences, including In the 11th canto, we can learn how to develop mystic power. Do you know how to develop mystic power? Does anyone know? Anyone here would like to have mystic power? Be honest. How do you develop mystic power? We don't know how to develop mystic power. How are you going to develop mystic power if you don't know how to do it? That's why we don't get anywhere. We want so many things, but we don't know how to get them. Tapasya. Just sitting in class here is tapasya. But you're not going to develop. It's going to be a long time before you get any mystic power. But it's a fact. But what kind of tapasya? What kind of tapasya? Anyone here read the 11th canto? Your reading was useless. How did Dhruva Maharaj develop mystic power? Austerities. How did austerities? Many people do austerities and they don't get mystic power. What kind of austerity did he do to get mystic power? To the extent that he got the mystic power. He concentrated his mind upon Krishna. Isn't that right? And then when he put his foot down on the earth, the whole earth caved in. Because the example is, for instance, if you try to run, you can only run so fast. Not that fast. But if you're in an airplane, you can go quite rapidly. Hundreds of kilometers an hour. Now you're not really doing anything different, but because you're identified, you're in the airplane, therefore you're suddenly going very fast. So similarly, when one identifies oneself with Krishna, one's consciousness and Krishna's consciousness are more or less, one identifies with Krishna's consciousness, then one gets the same potency that Krishna has. Now we don't get any more potency because we're not actually this body. But this body becomes potentialized. Just like when you put the iron in the fire, it gets hotter and hotter and hotter, and it becomes just like fire. So when one is Krishna conscious, then the body and the mind and the intelligence and everything becomes potentialized by association with Krishna, and therefore becomes as powerful as Krishna is. Almost. So similarly, by concentrating the mind upon Krishna, we can get mystic power. Actually, the body becomes potentialized by association with Krishna. So if you want to get Krishna mystic power, just think about Krishna. And if you can think about Krishna 24 hours a day with complete love and devotion, you'll get all the mystic powers. But then what can you do with them? If you use them in Krishna's service, then you'll be all right. If you use them outside of Krishna's service, then immediately you become fallen. You get the reactions. So, we shouldn't be so quick to get mystic power. Of course, the mystic power that we want is the same mystic power that Prabhupada had. What was Prabhupada, what did he say was his mystic power? Yes, he changed people's hearts. He said, before, when he was asked about, can you show us some mystic power, he said, he pointed to his disciples and said, this is my mystic power. Before they were meat eaters and et cetera, et cetera. And now they're mad after Krishna. He said, that's my mystic power. So that mystic power will be given to us as much as we're sincerely trying to become, spread Krishna consciousness. First, of course, we have to become Krishna conscious before we want to spread it. If you don't, for instance, if you go around selling some pancakes, it's a lot easier to sell the pancakes if you're convinced they taste good. If you taste the pancake, oh my God, what is this? This is terrible. Would you like to buy it? I got to get rid of this. It's disgusting. Sure, of course, how much is it? No. You won't be able to sell it. One can sell something, one is convinced that it tastes good, that it's actually beneficial. So if one becomes Krishna conscious, then one will become enthusiastic to distribute it to others too, because one will understand how nice it is. And then if we want to distribute to others, Krishna will empower us to do it, because that's what Krishna wants. Okay, so we're on Dwadasi here. That was yesterday. So conch shells, kettle drums, drums, panavas, and anakas vibrated in concert. The sound of these and various other instruments was tumultuous. Being very pleased, the celestial dancing girls, apsaras, danced in jubilation. The best of the Gandharvas sang songs, and the great sages, demigods, manus, pitas, and fire gods offered prayers to satisfy the Lord. The siddhas, vidyadharas, kimpurushas, kinaras, charnas, yakshas, rakshashas, suparnas, the best of the serpents. So there's there's bad serpents, there's the worst serpents, there's average serpents, there's better serpents, and there's the best of the serpents, the suparnas. And the followers of the demigods all showered flowers on Aditi's residence, covering the entire house, while glorifying, praising the Lord and dancing. So these things are easy to visualize. See a house and seeing flowers showering down. So this is transcendental meditation. Just to see some celestial house and see flowers falling from the sky, thrown by who? The best of the serpents. Now you can try and figure out how a serpent throws flowers. And then there's the rakshashas. What does a rakshasha look like? Anyone ever see a rakshasha? You never know. There's a lot of people who like rakshashas nowadays. Is that right? They have three fingers. Okay. How many toes do they have? I don't know. What is the characteristic of a rakshasha? What is their food? What's that? Yes, especially they like Brahmins, because they're in the mode of goodness. Sattvic food. They also have a raw diet. They eat everything raw. And they like sattvic food. And they were showering flowers. So, yakshas, who are the yakshas? Because we can just go through the whole Bhagavad Gita by the end. We haven't learned anything. We don't know who we're talking about. Who's the head of the yakshas? Begins with a K. Kuvara, yes. So they're servants of Kuvara. So they're a little bit in ignorance and passion, but still they're servants of a great demigod. And who are the siddhas? Where do they live? Siddhala. And what's the characteristic of the siddhas? Yes, from birth to some degree or another, they have all mystic powers. They can fly from planet to planet. They can do so many things. And the vidyadharas? So vidya means knowledge, and dhara means to hold. So they hold knowledge. What's that? What's They're demigods. Or semi-demigods. They're advanced demigods. They're famous for their singing. And Kim Purushas, what does Kim mean? What's that? What? No, no. Like birds. I don't think so. Kim means what? And Purusha, what does Purusha mean? Yeah. So Kim Purusha, Kim Nara, that's also from Kim. What? Nara means what? Human. So Kim means what kind of human is that? And Kim Purusha means what kind of person is that? So they're, what's that? Yeah, I mean, they have different Kim Purushas, for instance, Hanuman. They're part of the Kim Purushas. They look like the human beings, but they look different from human beings. They have, and Kinaras also. Charanas. They're also semi-demigods. When Aditi saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had appeared from her own womb, having accepted a transcendental body by his own spiritual potency, she was struck with wonder and was very happy. Upon seeing the child, Prajapati Kasyapa exclaimed, "Jai, Jai," in great happiness and wonder. And we'll read the next purport. I'm not going to read the Sanskrit because we only have 10 minutes left. I'll just read the translation. This is text 12. The Lord appeared in his original form with ornaments and weapons in his hands. Although this everlasting form is not visible in the material world, he nonetheless appeared in this form. Then in the presence of his father and mother, he assumed the form of Vamana, a Brahmana dwarf, a Brahmachari, just like a theatrical actor. Purport, the word nataha is significant. An actor changes dress to play different parts, but is always the same man. Similarly, as described in the Brahma Samhita, 5:33-39, the Lord assumes many thousands and millions of forms. Advaitam achutam anadim anantarupam adyam purana purusham. He is always present with innumerable incarnations. Ramadi Mortishu Kala Niyamena Tishtan Nanavataram Akarod Bhuvaneshu Kintu. Nonetheless, although he appears in various incarnations, they are not different from one another. He is the same person with the same potency, the same eternity and the same spiritual existence, but he can simultaneously assume various forms. When Vamanadeva appeared from the womb of his mother, he appeared in the form of Narayan, with four hands equipped with the necessary symbolic weapons. And then he immediately transformed himself into a brahmachari. Vayu. Vatu. This means that his body was not material. One who thinks that the Supreme Lord assumes a material body is not intelligent. He has to learn more about the Lord's past position. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 4.9, Janma Karma Jame Divyam Evam Yove Vitatvataha. One has to understand the transcendental appearance of the Lord in his original transcendental body, Satchitananda Vigraha. So Krishna, he has unlimited forms, and what form is the closest to us? What form do we have the closest contact with right now? We wish. Chanting the holy. Yeah, that gets us closer. What's that? Krishna Vrindavan. Wow, we have a really exalted group of devotees here. The Bhagavatam, wow. Who's closest to the soul right now? Yes, Paramatma. We have God right in our heart. Not only we have him outside, but he's actually in ourselves as Paramatma. So, in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, text number 35, I think the second chapter of the second canto of the Bhagavatam, is text 35. And it describes, just as we can understand that we're not this body, that the body is changing, but we ourselves are not changing, so by use of our intelligence, we can also understand the existence of Paramatma within ourselves. And therefore, with our intelligence, we can actually perceive that we're with Krishna all the time, or Krishna is with us all the time. So for most people, that's quite scary. Just like we have Santa Claus, he knows if you're bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. Or we have the NSA, which is always spying on people. So Krishna is in our heart, and he sees everything we're doing even before we do it. He sees everything before we do. So for the devotees, that's quite reassuring that the person, our best friend, is with us. And for the demons, it's quite disturbing. How to get him out of my heart. For instance, when Lord Varaha killed the brother of Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, then Hiranyaksha looked all over the universe to find Varaha, Lord Varaha, in order to kill him. So where did Lord Varaha go to hide? What's that? Yes, he went into Hiranyakashipu's heart because he knew that Hiranyakashipu would never look there. It's the one place in the universe Hiranyakashipu would never look. He would never look inside his own heart to see God. But are we supposed to look in our heart to see Krishna or God or Paramatma? Yeah, we should be aware of what Paramatma is telling us. And how do we know if Paramatma is speaking to us or if Maya is speaking to us? Does Maya ever speak to you? What does Maya usually tell us? What's that? Is that what she tells you? What? Does she give you any good reasons? What's that? Yeah, she's talking to, she give you any good reasons why not to chant Hare Krishna? Because she doesn't have to. She just tells you, you don't feel like it. We don't need reasoning. We just have to feel a certain way. Reasoning is, you know, even we have a good reason to do it, a good reason to do it, but if we don't feel like doing it, we won't do it. So we're ready on the feeling platform, this thinking, feeling, and willing. And if we don't feel like doing it, we just won't do it. Doesn't matter how much we think we should do it. And how do we know? So what does Maya tell? Maya usually says, oh, you're wonderful. You're exceptional. You're so exceptional. You can do whatever you want. And I'll talk to Krishna so the laws of material nature don't affect you. Besides that, I'm in charge of the material nature. So you do whatever you want, and I won't give you any reaction. And then you do whatever you want, you get a big reaction. You say, Maya, you told me that I wouldn't get a reaction. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, just do it again. This time I'll assure you I won't. You lied to me. No, I'm your friend. I wouldn't lie to you. And how do we know if Krishna is talking to us? Paramatma. What's that? No, Paramatma. How do we know if Paramatma is talking to us?
I meant that it's really good that
Yeah, he tells us not to listen to, but what does he tell us that's positive? How can we find out if Krishna is talking to us? Who does Krishna talk to? What's that? Yes, through Guru, Sadhana, Shastra. But even if we follow Guru and Sadhana and Shastra, when does Krishna actually talk to us? Yes, does Krishna talk to you when you chant? What's that? What's that? Does anyone? Can we get a translation?
And then that I feel like when I chant, Krishna.
Yeah, we're talking to Krishna when we're chanting, but how do we know when Krishna is talking to us? What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita when he talks to someone? When does Krishna talk to someone? According to Bhagavad Gita. Yes, that's the verse. When we're engaged in enthusiastic and steady service, then Krishna talks to us by giving us intelligence by which we can make progress in spiritual life. Or when we pay attention, we're careful what we're doing, and we do it with some care, then Krishna tells us, gives us intelligence how to do it better. So Krishna is always giving the devotee intelligence, whatever, but according to how careful and how steady we're doing it, Krishna gives us the proportionate intelligence. And for the non-devotee, Krishna also, according to how much they deserve, how much care and attention, how much they're desirous of doing something, then Krishna gives them intelligence how to do it. If you want to make $1 million, then Krishna will give you the intelligence how to do it. But it may be a long process. One has to be prepared to undergo a long process to get that money. But Krishna will give you the intelligence how to do it if one really wants it, according to how much one deserves. But for the devotee, all he has to become is enthusiastic and do his service very nicely for Krishna, trying to please him as nicely as he can, then Krishna will give him intelligence how to make advancement, to do it even more steadily and even more lovingly. So Krishna's intelligence is specifically for the devotee how to do his service more carefully and more enthusiastically and more steadily. So that's the intelligence Krishna is giving us. So we're able to get some insight in how to do our service more steadily and more enthusiastically, then that means that Krishna is talking to us. He's giving us the information how to do it. My mother's not doing it. My mother would never tell me how to serve Krishna more steadily or more enthusiastically. So it must be coming from somewhere. It must be coming from Krishna. So I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Thank you. Hare Krishna, thank you for lecture. Guru Maharaj, I wanted to ask, sometimes we don't have so much time to do our service with great attention or great, I don't know. Well, we have to do something more after, and we have to be very quick. So this may affect our efficiency.
Well, then you have to do it with more concentration, relying upon Krishna even more. If you have to do it, if that's absolutely necessary, and you pray to Krishna, please let me do this for you nicely, then Krishna will give you more intelligence how to do it nicely. We have to rely upon Krishna. Otherwise, if Krishna is out of the equation, it's very difficult for us to do anything properly. And if Krishna is there, and we rely upon him, then Krishna can do anything. After all, he's in charge of the whole universe. He could probably help our little service. He's giving everyone else, including the sun god, I had to wake up in the morning exactly on time. He has a bigger job than we have, and he's doing it quite nicely because Krishna is helping him.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Online question.
Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, as Krishna has innumerable forms, and he is also Paramatma in each of one's heart, and all bodies are actually his bodies. Can we say, in one sense, that we are guests in Krishna's body in that way? And does the body, like itself, has more connection than we have with Krishna? Something like that.
Well, we're guests here. We're renters. Prabhupada said sometimes use the analogy of a renter. Krishna is the owner of the house, and we're renting it. Or you could say we're a guest, because we're only here for a little while. But we have nothing to do with the body, except that we're experiencing it. Other than that, and according to our desire and what we deserve, then Krishna arranges different things for us, for this body, so that we get different experiences here. And under the spiritual energy, he also arranges our service. Under the spiritual energy, according to what we deserve and what we desire as a service, and what Krishna wants too. So there's, therefore, kshetra kshetra jnanam antara jnana chakshusha bhuta prakriti moksham cha ye vidur yanti te puram. One who can understand the difference between the body and the owners of the body can understand the process of liberation, attains to the spiritual kingdom. So we should understand as thoroughly as possible what our relationship with this body is, with Paramatma, what his relation with the body, and then we can obtain freedom from this entanglement. Okay.
One more, if okay. I can ask. About Paramatma in Bhagavad Gita, we can see that when mind is totally in control and senses also, we can easily reach Paramatma. But there is so many yogis that are very, conquer senses and mind, but they cannot reach Paramatma. Do we need to have service attitude also to reach Paramatma, not only conquer the senses in that way?
No, the only way of actually conquering the senses is to utilize them in Krishna service. Otherwise, they remain unconquered. Therefore, aruya krishchena paramparam tadat patanina nadrita yushmarangraha. Those who don't accept the lotus feet of Krishna, even though they may rise up to Brahman, but because they haven't really surrendered to Krishna, their intelligence remains impure. And if you have impure intelligence, you can't really conquer your mind and senses. It's only when they're actually engaged in Krishna service, then they actually become conquered, because they become spiritualized. And therefore, the example is when you have a venomous serpent, its bite is poisonous, but if its teeth, poisonous teeth are taken out, then they no longer can actually affect you. So only when we're engaged in full devotional service is the poisonous teeth of the senses taken out. Sense desire, because they're, and therefore they don't bother the soul anymore. They're actually, their activities under the spiritual energy are all ecstatic.
And maybe one more, this Vidyadharas, Kinaras, I don't know, don't have exactly human body.
They're demigods. Why would they want to have a human body? They look like humans. Mm-hmm. The Vidyadharas, because the form of Krishna is a human-like form, is the most attractive. But the Kimpurushas, the Kinnaras, and they're not exactly human beings, nor are the Rakshasas.
They are human beings, actually,
they're kind of. They're kind of, yeah. But what kind of human being are they?
Yeah.
They're not quite human beings.
I'm asking, can advance, make progress in that body also,
yeah, of course,
like we
can.
Are.
Well,
like we
hopefully
can.
We are. Hanuman was a Kimpurusha.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're also, they can be devotees too. Matter of fact, most of them are, the demigods are better devotees than we are right now.
I mean, interesting was Prabhupada said calves must have human body. They cannot progress in calves' body. Very interesting.
What's that?
Prabhupada made that point in one post that cows or another bird get human body because they cannot progress in cow's body. That is why I'm asking question about Vijayadharas, Kinaras.
No, they're not on the animal level. They're on the demigod level. They're above us. They have more consciousness than we do. But most of the demigods become attached to their power and opulence, so it's more difficult for them to actually become completely pure devotees, because they don't want to give up. If to do that, they have to give up all their opulence, or at least attachment to it. Okay. Kvala Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.